And then why don't we move on to Senator Bennett's 356.
So this is an act to require notification of certain outdoor pesticide applications. So the sponsor, when he presented the bill, proposed an amendment that would strike and replace the bill with a resolve directing the Board of Pesticides Control to amend rules on placement of pesticidal and rodenticidal baits and appropriate notification of abutters. So that resolve is described under the sponsor amendment. So it would require the Board of Pesticides Control to review and amend portions of Chapter 28 rules, which are notification provisions for outdoor pesticide applications, in order to require notification of property owners in the vicinity of pesticidal baits. And then it also provides that the rules adopted pursuant to this resolve are major substantive rules, but they would be anyway. I've attached the law regarding the board's rulemaking powers. And if you look at, it's section 610, subsection 2, rulemaking powers. And if you look at, I lost sight of it. I'll come back to it. So there were some suggested amendments. Wild Blueberry Commission in particular suggested amending it to give the board more specific instructions. The resolve is somewhat vague, and then also consider limiting the resolve to include only residential properties. I know that there have been discussions between the sponsor and the department on this bill, and I think there are some ideas about maybe giving the board direction to amend a different chaptered rule, but I guess I'll let them speak directly about that.
Questions for Karen, the analyst? Seeing none, I believe the Board of Pesticide Control might have discussed this at their last meeting, and if the director was willing to update us on that conversation, that'd be great.
Surveying that.
Yes, please.
Introduce yourself. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Pluker. My name is Alex Peacock. I'm the director of the Board of Pesticides Control. We did have a regular meeting of the board this past Friday, March the 14th, and LD 356 came up as a topic of discussion. And the board's only proposal was to present a policy to restrict the placement of rodenticides, pesticidal baits, to within 5 feet of a structure essentially try to satisfy the concerns with LD 356. Another option that came to mind was potentially moving to Chapter 41 under routine technical rulemaking to provide for special provisions for the placement of rodenticide baits and rodenticides, but wouldn't. Unfortunately, not really address the notification aspect of the bill.
Appreciate that, Senator Frost, or Representative Frost.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for being here. I guess when we had the public hearing, there was testimony raised about dangers to wildlife with these baits. Can you give me more info on that? Are you aware of this happening? And
yes.
I'm kind of leading towards wanting to ban them completely.
understandably, yes. So certainly, secondary exposure to rodenticides is a concern. Even with at the EPA level, yes. So a rodent. The mouse or rat would enter even a bait box, properly anchored bait box, feed on, rodenticide, then, leaves the bait box, presumably to, pass on somewhere, in their movement post, rodenticide feeding, depending on how much they feed, they're still prone to consumption by wildlife or, sadly by pets, as we heard in previous testimony. Therefore, that's certainly is a concern, which is why even the Current rodenticide strategy produced by the EPA seeks to make further restrictions to placement of rodenticides to try to reduce impacts on wildlife, in particular endangered species, as they've been, through a lawsuit, registration of pesticides need to go through more rigorous evaluations of impacts on endangered species. With that being said, it's, it's tough to pull together data specifically for wildlife impacts, but what we do know from a biological evaluation conducted by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service pursuant to the EPA's rodenticide strategy, they looked at 11 rodenticide active ingredients and found that they would have, no effect on 88% species and 95% of critical habitats, not likely to adversely affect 4 to 11% of species and 1% of critical habitats. Now, I'll remind you, this is just for listed endangered and threatened species at by the Endangered Species Act. But with that being said, there certainly is a concern for secondary exposure through, the feeding of rodenticides. How to eliminate that is a big question that the EPA is looking at. Some of the the recommended mitigations from this biological evaluation include, restricting the use of bait stations to only those that exclude listed endangered species by size and weight, so making the openings smaller, so only the target species could potentially get into the into the bait boxes, prohibiting broadcast and below ground in burrow applications, restricting bait station placement to within 5 feet of man-made structures, for areas where listed mammals may exist, prohibiting application of rodenticides to water, mandatory post-application follow-up that includes carcass searches and collection and disposal, prohibiting use in areas at times where listed species may be exposed to baits, covering burrows after applications in certain areas. We've certainly seen instances where in burrow applications were made where the rodenticides were left exposed, where the label expressly requires that to be buried at least 6 inches below surface so that it's not exposed. Also mandatory required reporting of dead or dying non-target organisms directly to the EPA. So these are some of the mitigation strategies that were recommended and that we do expect to see showing up on labels for rodenticides as the EPA continues through the registration review processes.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have any information on secondary poisoning to domestic pets?
Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of information outside of a few incidents that were reported to the EPA that there was the potential for that secondary poisoning, but without necropsy results, we it's kind of an unknown.
Of the listed baits, rodenticides, are there some that may have a greater affinity for causing a secondary poisoning, meaning that, it's even more toxic or whatever the case may be, has emetics in it, and does an emetic work in a secondary case if a dog was to eat one?
That's a great question. I know for sure there's what are known as second generation anticoagulant rodenticides. Being an anticoagulant, they prevent any clotting and cause excessive internal bleeding. And through on those pesticide labels, you even find instructions to veterinary providers to what to do in the event of animal feeding on these rodenticides. And there are, with this rodenticide strategy, one of the original proposals was to make these second generation anticoagulant rodenticides restricted use across the board, making them only available to use by licensed probably licensed applicators, which would not allow them to be purchased by a homeowner. Some states, I believe, have fallen suit with that and made restricted that use on their own.
One last question.
Yes.
I don't know if it's still in it from the amendments, but originally it said to notify people within 500 feet of the bait station. I did that at my house and drew a 500-foot circle. And in that case, I would have to notify, 31 properties across three streets plus the high school. So certainly I think that's excessive, even though I must admit, unfortunately, Old Town does have a rat problem. So I think there's probably quite a use of rodenticides in the town, even though I haven't heard much of anybody's pets dying. Would you think that maybe just abutting landowners might be a better solution here than 500 feet?
Abutting landowners could be, yes. When you're at a 500-foot radius from, any point on your property line, as you said, that gets, to be quite comprehensive to your surroundings. For instance, our current notification registry rule is 250 feet. So that, maybe that may be a more amenable, distance, or even potentially just based on rodenticides, certainly direct abutters would certainly decrease the number of notifications that need to be made.
Other questions? Yeah, Senator Black.
Thank you. And I might have missed this along the way, but what would this classify? Would this classify the local stuff that you buy over the counter, would that come under this classification, like Barbate and Decon and that kind of stuff?
Yes.
Anything that would kill. Yeah.
That's correct.
Other questions from the committee? Oh, Representative Frost.
Thank you, Representative Dratt. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to ask some questions of Heather from MOFCA, Heather Spalding, before we vote.
I don't have tons of experience with rodenticides. So the anticoagulants are the most common ones that are on the market, like the one Senator Black was discussing.
They are the new generations there tend to be the more commonly ones found on the market. You still find the first generations are still available, strychnine, if you will, but the second generations have are more commonly found today.
And the strychnine type rodenticides have a greater or lesser effect on secondary consumption by pets?
I can't really speak to that for sure, but I don't think there's any, when a rodent leaves the bait box, they could fall prey to, any wildlife or animal that's out there. And I right now could not speak to the, if there were more, more significant impact to wildlife or pets from the first generation to the second generation.
So in my mind, we're called a second generation because it's better in some way. Is that true? And if it is better in some way, could you tell us why it's better?
Oh, I cannot speak to why it would be better. I just don't understand. It's a newer technology, newer chemistries potentially more effective, if you will. But I can't really speak to the chemistry behind it.
Okay.
Right, currently.
Representative Dill, did you have your hand raised?
I'm good.
Okay.
I've got less than
one. Other questions from the committee? Representative Dill, did you have a potential amendment that you were thinking of?
No.
No.
Not at the moment.
Okay. All right. And then I think we had a request from Representative Frost to speak to Deputy Director Spaulding.
Oh, I do have one.
Oh, Representative
Dill. Thank you. If we were to restrict rodenticides, would there be anything left for the homeowner? I'm not saying restrict them all. I say we started with the second generation. Would there be much left if we just strictly said no to homeowners for baits? I mean, that's an option too, just restrict them all. So,
right. That would leave a limited amount available, but would, provide for, certainly trapping is still, still an opportunity for homeowners, and exclusion, but it would limit the availability of rodenticides to the homeowner.
I think I saw Representative Drett first, just because he's next to me.
Sorry. Thank you. Just trying to be a gentleman. I think I would feel more comfortable if we got rid of the pesticidal baits and turned it into rodenticidal baits. I think I would feel more comfortable with that.
Yep, I think I would too. Representative Frost.
The problem with that, sorry, thanks. Thank you for letting me speak. I guess the problem with that comes back to if it's going to kill a rodent, then we still have the problem with wildlife, right? And pets still, dogs and all that. How difficult would it be to just ban, how difficult would it be for the pesticide companies or the, what's the right word? Yeah.
We do have a chapter for state restricted use pesticides, which still would only, if that route were taken, we'd have to take a look at all of the chemistries that are available, determine, if it is just the second generation anticoagulants that, would be recommended for restriction, but any restriction would place the use of rodenticides only to the, properly licensed applicators, professional applicators and, anybody who carries a proper license for pesticide application. I will say, so rodenticides are obviously, they're designed to impact rodents and mammals. Many of the other pesticidal baits are geared towards insects, cockroaches, and would not have as much impact on mammals as rodenticides.
Representative Drett.
Thank you. I still think if we had no rat poison, that we'd have rat traps that will still, pets can get into rat traps. So I don't know that we could ever ban rat poison. You know what I'm saying? Because animals can still, your pets can still get into your rat traps and other traps and stuff like that. So I just wanted to throw that out there. We do have rat problems all over the state.
I'm going to go down here. Representative Cooper.
Okay. Just maybe a little bit for you, but as a farm owner, we deal with trying to control rat populations. Mice are minor. We have not found any kind of a mechanical trap that is effective at controlling numbers. We use some baits carefully placed inside the buildings, and very quickly we can control them. Without those, we would have a problem reaching the point where the neighbors complain. I know other farms around the state have run into that, even municipalities. The whole banning is very concerning. Is our effective control dumping stuff outdoors scattered around the neighborhood is not my intention there, but we have a tool that works, and I have a lot of concern. And I haven't heard, unless you have some better options, to that.
I think what if in just to clarify, I think what he's posited is other states have done is made it restricted use, which means only pesticide applicators could use it. And most farms have pesticide applicators already on staff, or the farmer themselves is a pesticide applicator. So that is one possible. Yeah, Representative Cooper.
With that, my understanding is pest control is a different license core category than field crops or greenhouse products. So again, we would require a different license than most farms typically have. Am I correct?
Technically, yes, that would be, I believe that would be correct. Was that, the structural rodenticide placement falls into our structural application category. That being said, I'd have to take a closer look at the rules, because currently, as we are, any private applicator, farm applicator with a commodity or a commercial applicator has access to restricted use pesticides. And when we do sell pesticides, I guess we do ask the restricted use dealers they to verify licensing and the proper categories for sale. So I suppose we would, if that was the route to go, there would be a potential for a, I guess it wouldn't be a commodity, but maybe a another, for our private applicators, we would have to look at another category for, agricultural crop protection, if you will, for rodents to make rodenticides available to private applicators. So I believe you're correct, Representative Cooper, that currently a private applicator would, if they were restricted, a private applicator without the structural pest control category would not be able to apply or obtain that product, rodenticides.
Okay, so I'm a, yeah, I got a couple. I got Representative Dill and Senator Black and maybe some others. So I'm a private applicator, but I cannot, unless I have not taken any special classes on putting baits in or around structures. So without that extra test, I wouldn't be able to be qualified to put baits around.
Correct. So like for a good example is currently we, we restrict the use of all aquatic herbicides. And so if somebody were to walk into a pesticide dealer to purchase a aquatic herbicide, the restricted use pesticide dealer would need to verify their licensure and that they have the category of 5A, which is aquatics, to then purchase that pesticide.
Representative Dill.
Except that I assume that since as we did this bill, we could actually put farmers into the bill somehow, from the standpoint of if you're a private applicator in blueberries and I have a blueberry license, I can then go and spray vegetables, I can spray apples, I can spray potatoes, and they're entirely different. So I would suggest that what we might want to do is restrict the use of rodenticide, make rodenticides restricted use, allow farmers to be able to use them on their farms, and to notify abutting contiguous landowners of the use of rodenticides so that they now know. I'm leaving the homeowner out of this, because once you restrict it, they can't get them anyway, but then the farmers can use it, the PCOs can still use it. It's just that they have to notify anyway, for the most part, a lot of things that they do. So that would be my suggestion.
Can you just tell us what PCOs are?
Oh, pest control. Okay.
And Senator Black.
Well, the bill sponsor is here, so I think we should call him up, see, as soon as we can.
Thank you.
Did you have a question for the director?
Oh,
okay, Representative.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I think I know the answer to this before I ask it, but do you track in some manner if you have a complaint against a roadside that has, and don't take this the wrong way, Senator, if someone's lost their animals or something, is there a way that we could track that? Do you track that?
Yes. So when we have, we certainly respond to complaints of rodenticide misuse, and In the event that if an animal was, you know, a pet or other wildlife in that, of course, that investigation was determined to have, you know, been poisoned by the, you know, whether it's direct consumption or secondary consumption, yes, we would be able to track that. And we do respond annually to a number of, you know, misuse of rodenticides, because, you know, we still find that people want to, you know, sprinkle it around an area outside fully exposed where, you know, where the, you know, animals are an issue, whether it's around their automobile or their shed. And, you know, similarly with mothballs, but, you know, it's you read directions for use on a pesticide label, whether it's a rodenticide or even mothballs, you know, it's a violation of federal law to use this product inconsistent with the labeling. And if you read your decon labels, it's going to, you know, provide for application in areas that cannot be accessed by children, pets, and, you know, wildlife.
And just to follow up, and again, I think I know the answer to this one too. Is it more a homeowner's issue, or is it more of an agricultural issue?
We typically, the misuse of rodenticides typically falls to the unlicensed applicators in these situations, homeowner products. As I mentioned, that rodenticide strategy at one point was, a proposal was that even the over-the-counter, if you will, rodenticides were already in a pre-manufactured box that, you know, hopefully tamper resistant, that, you know, nobody could really get into and prevent the, you know, the use of crumbling the blocks and placing them around, you know, in an inappropriate manner, off label use. So we typically don't find, you know, misuse of rodenticides amongst the licensed, regulated community.
Senator Black, you had a question for Senator Bennett.
Yes. After hearing this discussion we've been having, sure, what are your thoughts on
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Rick Bennett. I have the honor of serving the people of 14 towns in Western Maine, the state Senate, across parts of Androscoggin, Cumberland, Oxford counties. Thank you for the question. This whole discussion, this whole bill for me has been a humbling experience, and it's been a learning experience. And the bill came out more broadly drafted than I intended. And so, unfortunately, all of us heard from a lot of people affected by it. We went to work in a collaborative fashion, inclusive, to try to narrow the scope of the bill. I think there's lots of legitimate questions raised about the use of these materials. It's, in my view, it's beyond the scope of what I was trying to address in the bill. What I was trying to address is this exemption in the notification requirements for the use of these particular toxins, and simply to allow people to know what their neighbors are doing. And whether that's within 250 feet or abutters, I think that I also concluded in talking with the stakeholders who engaged really well, I thought, you know, across the agricultural community, the people engaged as professionals in pest control. A lot of folks came to the table with me, and I want to respect that process. What we concluded was that, first of all, that there's already rules governing this area, and rather than take a statutory approach, what we concluded was to consider doing resolve to direct a change in rulemaking that would focus on the question of notification of the use of these materials, and make sure that's congenial to current rules, so that, you know, sometimes when we do this from the statutory level, we make a blunt change and then everything else gets messed up under the rules side. And so the proposal that we came to was a resolve to change Chapter 28. What the director mentioned was a change in Chapter 41. And I also want to say thank you to the Board of Pesticide Control and for Director Peacock for engaging as well and being thoughtful and constructive about this. But I think, and the difference between, one of the differences between Chapter 41 and Chapter 28 is Chapter 41, which may be easier to change, is routine and technical rules. Chapter 28, which we could do the changes with with notification would be major substantive. And so I actually think it's better in this case, I'd prefer to go routine and technical if it's possible. But I think in this particular case, since there's a lot of heightened interest in this topic, that major substantive isn't a bad thing. And I think I'd really like to refocus the intentionality of the bills around notification. It's not about banning. I think there's lots of questions about that. But I don't think this is the bill for that. And so I would just kind of gently ask the committee if you're willing to kind of respect the stakeholder process that I initiated after the bill was heard. And I heard from some members of this committee, too, about like, you better get this bill under control. So I've tried to respect that as well. And I think we've done that. I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
One second. I think that no matter anything we discuss doing here in terms of creating restrictions or that kind of thing would all go back to Board of Pesticide Control. It would all be resolved for them to write rule changes. I think no matter what we discuss is all within that format and not making a clear statutory change. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense to me, although it doesn't have to be that way. And I just wanted to say, I came to the conclusion myself along the lines that you're coming to, Representative Pluker, that that's a better approach here. There are people who are very practiced. They know the science. They know the effects, you know, pushing on a balloon on one side, you know. So I think that that would be wise. Whatever the committee decides to do is to direct it through rulemaking. And again, I don't want the notification piece to get lost.
Great. Representative Frost.
Thanks, Senator Bennett. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I do hope we can bring Heather up just because I think that in her testimony, she said they talked about a centralized automated geographic information system tied to an email or text notification system will minimize burdens on land managers applying pesticides outdoors. And apparently, again, I don't have the details, but it sounds like this used to be in place and it's no longer in place. And I feel that will respond to your bill if we could get more clarification on that.
Is that a question?
Yeah, it's just. Are you willing to stay and hear what?
Of course.
No, okay, great. And then, yeah, then we can figure it out from there.
No, and the stakeholder group that I worked with is just, you know, part of the thing. The committee's got to make the decision about which direction to go. But I just didn't want to lose track of the essential purpose of the bill was to allow neighbors notification of what's being used that could affect their animals. The science on this is vague, and the science is vague because it's really expensive to do an autopsy on a dead dog. And it just, you know, and it's not going to get done. So on a systematic way that you could draw conclusions from it. But I do think notification so people can adjust to potential risks is really kind of easier ground to go to.
Makes sense. Thank you. Other questions for the senator before we call up the deputy director? Seeing none. Thank you. Representative Frost.
Thank you for being here. could you please review for us the process that used to be in place as far as what we're talking about here?
Yes. Yeah, so, Representative Frost, I shared information. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Thank you. My name is Heather Spaulding, and I am Deputy Director of Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. And thank you, Representative Frost, for inviting me up. I don't want to prolong this work session, but what I shared with Representative Frost after the public hearing on this bill was just some of the background about the system that used to be in place where it was really focused on outdoor application of pesticides so that people could opt into a notification system and anybody who was applying pesticides outdoors would have to notify the Board of Pesticides Control once. There's one call they would have to make, and then that information would automatically be shared with people who opted into a registry. That was the reason that I shared that information was because I felt like that was, it was a bit of a move. This bill was a bit of a moving target. There was an amendment that came forward before the public hearing. I was prepared for a different version of it. And I just wanted to stress the point that I do feel, we feel that people should have the right to know about chemicals that they are being exposed to, or they have the potential to be exposed to, and that there is a way to embrace technology to help people get that information and to make it easy on the people who are applying the chemicals. So that was sort of the background. It was in place very briefly, but then it was repealed by the legislature. It's mothballed. It doesn't exist anymore. There are other opportunities for people to get access to information. They have to proactively go and contact their neighbors, or you know, there are different. There's a registry that you know about that you can pay $20 a year to be on and get the privilege of information, paying for that information. So anyway, I just I think in what this particular bill is being narrowed down to, I'm not sure how the broader notification system would, automated notification system would work. But I feel like that is an important thing for us to be striving for. I also wanted to add, I think Director Peacock may have mentioned that California has banned the anticoagulant rodenticides. Did you mention that? Somebody mentioned that, but
He did mention that some states have made it restricted use.
Okay. Well, California has banned the anticoagulant rodenticide. So they have done away with that. And, you know, for organic producers, you know, the approach is really you have to strive for prevention before you would implement any kind of pesticide, whether it's approved for on the Organic Materials Review Institute or not, but that would be an absolute last resort, and there would have to be like complete separation from any of the livestock or crops that are being produced. So,
Representative Frost, did you have a follow up?
Yes. I guess my follow-up question would be, so this phone service that used to be in place, I mean, do you think it could be applied to this bill? Because we're talking about putting down rodenticides.
Yeah, I mean, especially if the rodenticides were made restricted use and you had to have a specific license, then yeah, that if you take these products out of the hand of homeowners, I think it would be harder if they were readily available everywhere to get compliance, but it could be. But again, I think that it's a comprehensive data system that would really inform the broader use of all pesticides, for what purpose, when, at what time of year, you know, what location. So I think it could work, but it's we'd have to bring it back.
Other questions for the deputy director? Seeing none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Dill, did you want to restate any motion or thoughts you're having?
From the final discussions that we've had and listening to Senator Bennett, I think it's probably best that we leave this as a resolve, and I would put it back to the Board of Pesticides Control to look into it and come back and report back to us at the first of the year with their thoughts on it. And then at that point in time, we either go to rulemaking or we make it a statutory right here. That would be my motion.
I'm gonna, are we looking for a second on that?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a second? Is there any rule against me seconding that, Karen? No.
I'll second it.
And Karen.
So you would so you're proposing a resolve simply rather than you're not directing the board to undertake any rulemaking or amending rules. You're just asking them to look into the issue and then to report back to this committee next session. And then by that, by virtue, will give you authority to submit a bill based on their report to this committee.
At that point in time, we can pull or either do a put a bill, or if they come back to us with it, that they can do it through rulemaking, we can do it that way, either way. But it would give us authority to report out if right. we need a bill if we need to.
Right.
On what they report back.
Okay.
I think if you're all right with a couple of friendly amendments, just to specify January 15th.
Yeah, sure.
And I think specifically looking into the impacts of restricting some of this, the of rodenticides. Okay. All of them. Yeah. Because looking at, I think I'd like some answers as to the strychnine, what we refer to as strychnine versus the anticoagulants, and what would the impact of either one be? And then would you also want to include your idea of adjoining, abutting landowner notification? That's sufficient.
That's sufficient. They can come back with however they want, because that's notification. Senator Bennett asked about notification, so I think if it has to be specifically in there, I can. But I think I see Director Peacock nodding, so I think he's got the idea of what we're looking at. So
maybe he could drop the amendment.
Oh, it's my turn.
It's your turn.
We'd like to caucus.
Representative Frost, did you have an additional piece you wanted to add?
Yes. Oh, is the Board of Pest Control still here?
Yeah,
I'm still
here.
Oh, moving seats. Also with the request for information, if you could bring us some information on wildlife death, that would be helpful.
I think secondary poisonings in general, that anything that you could find for us.
We got a hand raised over there.
Jackson, Representative Jackson.
I'd like to make a motion to table.
There's no debate on tabling motions. All those in favor?
Yes.
No. All those opposed? You can't abstain. Oh, did you raise your hand already?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Okay, all right. It's table.
Done.